And welcome to another edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here from the Quest Diagnostics Training Center in East Rutherford, New Jersey, as the Giants prepare for Sunday's game against the Philadelphia Eagles at MetLife Stadium. Paul Tatino and Howard Cross with you. He is at Howard Cross 87. I am at Giants WFAN. We're going to be here for the next hour to take your questions, your comments, your calls, whatever you want to talk about regarding the Giants and the upcoming game against Philadelphia. Game kickoff is 1 o'clock on Sunday, so enjoy yourselves if you're able to come out here. And if not, you know, enjoy it at home and watch it on the television. In the meantime, as we prepare for it, it's 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513 if you want to give us a call. You can always get to us on Twitter if you're a little bashful and shy and don't want to dial us up on the phone. It's hashtag at Giants Chat. And we'll try to get to your comments there, if at all possible, during the course of the show. Want to mention today, Giants had practice, of course. All of their players, except for Darian Thompson, were at the very least limited, if not better. So the Giants' health is certainly improving as they prepared for Philly, coming off of the bye week after the win in London against the Rams. Darian Thompson, we know that he has been battling a foot injury for quite a while, waiting for a status report on him. But for the most part, the good news for this Giants team, Howard, they are getting a lot healthier. Odell Beckham Jr. said yesterday the hip pointer that he dealt with in London is now at about 85%, and his 85% is probably better than most people's 100%.
Yeah, I think so. I think he's a tough kid regardless. I think he's been playing well. I thought it was very interesting even in London that he caught a ball that looked like it was basically a pitch. And he ran into him. I'm like, okay, that's interesting. So he must be feeling pretty good, right? So that's how I view it.
He was a guy who admitted to us, by the way, also yesterday in his media session. He said it was like 8 minutes before they had to turn in the active list, and he was fighting that hip pointer, and he even tried to run a couple of practice routes, and it really hurt, and he wasn't sure if he was going to go. And, of course, he talked it over with Jerry Reese, talked it over with Coach McAdoo and the trainers, and it was like a last-minute decision, and he decided, yeah, he was going to do it. And he gutted it out. And quite frankly, Howard, I thought he showed a lot to his teammates and his fellow players. Well, that'd be his teammates. As to how gutsy he was, because he caught a big pass inside the 10 that set up Rashad Jennings' winning touchdown.
Yes, he did. I think, you know, when we look at athletes today, we're always wondering how tough they are with these bodies. Everyone's trying to take care of their body. They're trying to always make it to their next contract or their next day. But he's, you know, playing, you know, reckless. That's what you want to see in your
players. He's a competitor.
That's right. You want that guy to be your guy every week.
And the other guy that I want to mention here, Howard and I talked about it, and again, I know the game is a couple of weeks old, but I want to bring this up because I don't think it got enough play, and I don't think he got enough credit. But this is like the 15 billionth time that we have seen Dwayne Harris peeled up off the ground, battered, taped together, stapled together, and I don't know how he was even able to walk again. And the way he came back in that game after being knocked out, and I mean knocked out, and then carted off, Howard, he's a machine.
Okay, first off, he wasn't knocked out. That's a bad term these days.
You're right. He was. I don't want to say
back, his back. He was hitting the back.
He had lost his wind. He could not breathe.
Yeah,
he was
in his back.
When I say knocked out of the game, I should not say knocked out because that implies concussion. He did not have. And I know you're sensitive to that.
Because everybody else is sensitive.
Correct.
But here's the thing.
He takes a beating, Howard, and he just won't go away.
We make jokes about it. He's like, you know, the Walking Dead. He's a zombie. He every time you kill him, he keeps coming after you. Or Luke Cage, the famous Marvel character who can't feel any pain because his body's impervious to pain. He seems to find a way to do things week in and week out. One of the toughest guys I've ever seen playing football. And I mean that, you know, watching a lot of guys, kind of like an LT.
Ike Hilliard was like that, too.
Ike was another really tough guy. He falls in line with all those guys. Like, unbelievable.
Yeah, so I just want to give a tip of the cap to Dwayne Harris because, I just don't think he gets enough credit for doing what he does, especially considering he's a special team guy.
Yeah.
And you know those guys really get beaten up a lot.
Well, especially the returner. You know, the special team guys fly down the field. They hit guys. They do all that. They block. They're running around. But when you're the returner, everybody's focus is on you. And he's been the focus for years, his whole career. So it's great to see a guy that tough.
All right, one other piece of news that has come down the pike this morning. The Eagles have released a kickoff returner, Josh Huff. who has already returned a kickoff for a touchdown this year. Very dangerous kickoff returner. He had an off-the-field incident that the Eagles had to deal with the other day, and now this morning they have released him. So that's one player that will not be available in Sunday's game. 201-939-4513 is our phone number. Let's go to the lines. And Ken from New Jersey, you're first on the show. Hello.
Hey, Paul. Hey, Howard. How's it going, guys?
Very good, guys. What's up, Kim?
What's going on? I wanted to know, before the break, Ben McAdoo had talked about, like, self-evaluation and stuff like that. We're coming out in 11 personnel, like 95% of the time, give or take. Do you guys think that we're going to use that a little less and maybe a more run-heavy or run-friendly formation going into the second half of the season?
I have no idea. It depends on, one, how healthy everyone is. Can, you know, something that they figure out on the interior of the line be more productive? I know that the fans talk about that a lot because of, you know, it's hard to run in that formation, people believe. But the problem with the runs is that the pressure seems to, in my opinion, come a lot up the middle. So you're not able to get to the edge when you're trying to make a decision if you're going to run. If that would imply that, you know, oh, the tight end's not doing this, or maybe the fullback's not doing that. But if you get pressure up the middle, if you get someone gets one or two steps on you, it kind of disrupts the running game.
Okay. All right. Awesome. Thank you. Well, the time is now, guys. We got to snap this losing streak against the Eagles. And if we're going to do anything, we got to win this game on Sunday. And I've been actually waiting for Anita to be back on the show. Week one, I called in and said I was more worried about Dak Prescott than Tony Romo. I just wanted you guys to tell her, told you so. And that's all I got. Go Big Blue.
All righty.
All right, no problem. Let me just mention something here, Howard, in terms of deployment of players. Coach McAdoo did say yesterday they're still going to go with the basic core philosophy of everything that they have designed. They're going to stick with the plan, I believe, was the phrase that he used. But he also did say, and I would like to quote him directly, but for lack of a better opportunity to do so, not being able to find the quote so quickly, he did also say on Monday coming off of the bye that he did expect to use more players more. The hint was, or at least I kind of interpreted it, that there may be some more snaps for some of the lesser-used guys that we haven't seen in the first half of the season. I'm assuming guys like maybe Perkins, Jarrell Adams, maybe Bobby Rainey. I'm assuming that that's what he meant. He did not clarify, and I didn't follow up, which was maybe my bad. But I got the impression that he was looking to perhaps maybe use some different personnel combinations, and some of the guys who have been on the bench may get some more looks.
Okay, well, you know, I'm all for that. I think that in any situation, the guys you have on the field and the guys that you're calling on to play for you are the guys that you trust the most.
Right.
So hopefully during this bye week, a couple of other guys have earned some trust so that they can get themselves on the field. I don't think fans realize that if I can't trust you to do what needs to be done every time, I can understand if there's an issue once. But if I can't trust you, it's hard to give you playing time. Because I keep referring to my son, but I tell my son all the time, everything that you do when you play is important. You may be on the far side of the field, but if you're not doing your job, then whatever's happening on the side where the ball is, you can affect that. So that I think he has to be able to trust them.
Yeah, here's the quote. I did find it, Howard. He says here, we're going to make some adjustments to roles with players, acclimate some more guys in, maybe de-acclimate some guys, make some adjustments schematically, and move on down the road. That did hint to me there might be a little bit of flexibility with the personnel deployment.
Well, let's put it like this. When he says activate some guys, maybe
acclimate
some guys and maybe de-acclimate some guys, means like you can like take, okay, you're playing bad, I'm going to take you out, I'm going to put you in. That's what that can mean. It can mean a thousand different things. So we'll see. We'll see if we can get some more people in there.
Do you think it's fair to say that by this point in time that Paul Perkins may have picked up enough, especially in the pass protection scheme, that maybe they might take a chance and trust him in a little bit more? Is that possible at this point?
I think it is. I don't know why he's not playing, but like I was speaking to someone at Eagles Radio yesterday, and they were asking me the same question about their running game because, you know, you got all these guys down there running the ball, three or four different guys, and it was the same conversation that we've had in the past, rhythm. can you trust a guy long enough to give him rhythm? Can you give him enough reps to create a rhythm so he can get to know, you know, who's blocking who, who's coming free, and why?
All right, let's go back to the phones. Sam from D.C., you're next on the show. Hello. Hi, Sam.
Hey, Paul. Hey, Howard. How are you guys doing today?
Very good.
Hey, I just had two questions, one on the defensive side, one on the offensive side. My first question and slash analysis was with Landon Collins. I mean, boy, did he kind of kill the idea or the notion that he was only a line of scrimmage guy in the last game. This guy's dangerous with the ball in his hands when he gets the ball in his hands.
That was a heck of a return.
Yep.
Oh, it sure was. And his just ability to be elusive with, I mean, that was impressive. And so my question is,
can he play tight end? No. Okay, just checking. Just checking. I'm sorry.
That'd be impressive. That'd be really impressive. But the really good question is, can we see some more of the three safety set? You know, because this guy seems like he could play in the box. He could be probably a good matchup with Darren Sproles coming out of the backfield. And at the same time, I mean, against the run, he is stout. Would you guys potentially like to see that a bit more, kind of him sprinkled in different situations,
Before I let Howard address that philosophically, let me make sure that you understand something. Adams right now is the only bona fide, true, healthy safety on the roster. Burhey is still in concussion protocol. He has practiced non-contact drills to this point and has not been cleared to participate in a game. Darian Thompson is not practicing today, and we're waiting for a status report on him. So who's your third safety going to be if you're going to play a three-safety package? So that's the first question. But philosophically, Howard, if you'd like to answer that, you're welcome to.
I think he's doing very well. I think I want to see him more in coverage, understanding tight end spacing, having him play the ball better when it's in the air. You know, he had two incredible plays. He had, you know, scoring a touchdown, catching the ball. Again, balls that are tipped. So there's not a lot of the ball's been – something's been taken off the ball. The ball's hanging in the air. He puts himself in the right position to catch it. I want to see him go up and take a ball out of the air when a guy's when he's going right to the guy. That's
agreed.
What I mean. That's the spatial recognition that comes with him. And the term that's used is being able to play the ball or having ball skills as a defensive back.
Right, a ball hawk, so to speak.
Yes, which is what Darian Thompson's supposed to be, well, based on his college film.
I get that, but, you know, playing the ball, being a ball hawk is a great term, but you got to be able to play the ball when it's in the air, which means not necessarily intercept the ball. It's, you know, where the receiver is, where to put your hand, how to wall him off or how to get in position. Hey, Camardi has the greatest ball skills I've seen for a long time, just watching him on a daily basis. He's up there in the top, you know, maybe four or five cornerbacks in the league because of his ball skills. Mm-hmm. He got closing speed. He has all this stuff, but he has this incredible way. He knows where to put his body, how to position himself. He's a good player.
Correct. Well, thank you for that analysis. And then my second question would be on the offensive side, and I'm glad we have Howard on for this one with the tight end position. I mean, the media's kind of overanalyzed this, but I'd like to get your guys' perspective on really what's going on based on what you guys have seen. Are these guys really getting overpowered? Are they not kind of your big, heavy-set guy that really can block and seal the edge? Or is it more of a technique thing? Because, I mean, Will Tye seems like a pretty big dude to me. You know, it's not happening. What do you guys see? And I'll take this question off the air. Appreciate you guys. Go Big Blue.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think that blocking is something that you have to – like, you come in college, you'll play in college, you'll block. I've told people that I played against Kenneth Bennett and Derek Thomas in college. Come to the Giants, I'm against LT and Banks in the pros. So, and we were able to rep it a lot. Like, those are the things that I think are missing. So if you come in – and I see it in our high school, and they have 707 throwing camps. If you come in and you're teaching these kids, you're a receiver that happens to play tight end, then you're watching them constantly. They're working on their down and out. They're working on their quick slant. They're working on their hands, catching in traffic. But they're not working on inline blocking with a guy right in front of them. They're like they view it as an and it's not our guys, it's just guys in general, they view it as, well, it's a necessary evil for me to be in there. They don't understand that, hey, look, this is important, and you have to be able to do this. Our guys, they do get overpowered sometimes, and sometimes they make great blocks. But if they're making a great block, no one sees it. That's the issue. When they are, I've seen, you know, Larry Donnell seal a guy off. I've seen Larry Donnell roll a guy off and create a hole. But you're not seeing that. You'll see if the back makes a great run. No one's coming back and going, man, he did a great job on that block. And that's the problem that you have when you're viewing this. You see the negatives. So if his guy makes a tackle, you know it's Larry Donnell. But if his guy never makes a tackle and the play stopped in the backfield, but Larry has his guy, or Will Ty has his guy, or Adams has his guy, you don't know it because you're not focused on it.
Highlight film mentality.
Yeah, it is. So unfortunately, as we watch, we like to pick apart and determine what went wrong. We're always right when we're saying what went wrong because we don't have the benefit of having to do the play when it's going on. So we can't be wrong in our suggestions.
Howard, the only guy from a generic fan's perspective who kind of fought that was John Madden. Because John Madden, when he would do a national game, he would diagram that, and he would say, look at the tight end. Look at him making his block on the end. Boom, look at that. Oh, look how it crossed. Just blew it out there for Joe Morris or Rodney Hampton. And John Madden made that nouveau. John Madden, with his Madden Awards at the end of the year, would say, I'm going to give awards to the guys who I love, who are blood and guts football guys, who make those plays. He wasn't interested in highlights. He was interested in the guys who did the dirty work.
Yes, Madden.
Right?
Madden did do that, and that's pretty cool.
And we lost that. When he retired, who does that now?
It has something to do with that. Think about this. When you watch games, how many games have you watched where you saw a tight end getting great blocks?
Nobody isolates the tight end with a camera and then talks about it on the network television.
So even games
– he did that, though. He did that.
Even the games that we're playing in and we're watching the other team's tight end. Have you watched the tight end?
Yeah, doesn't happen.
Roll somebody off the ball? Is somebody, like, you know, taking Vernon out of the play or JPP? Is he taking one of our linebackers and pushing him back?
Nobody makes a big deal out of it.
Yeah, but you're not seeing a tight end do that.
Well – and but it comes back to that whole glory thing.
Yeah.
You know? And maybe if there were more John Maddens on TV that would give glory to guys who do that, maybe they wouldn't be so allergic to doing it.
Okay. My point.
That's all I'm saying.
I got you. But my point is this. We watched the Dallas Cowboys. We watched Ezekiel Elliott, and we were there the first game of the season, and we watched Jason Witten, who's known as the blocking tight end.
Had a tough time.
Yeah, he got knocked around a lot.
Had a tough time that night.
You watched the Cowboys today. And you're watching Ezekiel Elliott, who's leading the league in rushing.
He is.
You are not watching Jason Witten sealing guys off. You're watching him play. Mm-hmm. You're not watching him seal them off.
Yeah.
You know, you watch Gronkowski, the man child who's playing. He's not blowing dudes off the ball. That's just not part of the game for a lot of people. And then the guys that are doing it, maybe a guy down in Pittsburgh may be doing it. You're not really seeing him because you're talking about Ben. Mm-hmm. Or you're talking about the running back.
I know.
Or you're talking about Brown.
It's a thankless job, Howard.
Yeah, it's part of it.
I know. Joe from Pennsylvania, you're next on the show. Hello.
Hey, good morning, Paul.
Hi.
Good morning, Howard.
Good morning, Joe.
I basically want to talk about this game and what you think. I think it's going to be a field position game here, and I'm just hoping we don't start, you know, by giving them 10 points like we did the last two teams, the Ravens and was it the Rams, you know?
Yep.
And I hope we, you know, make the Eagles earn everything because they have a couple new guys up in their offensive line, and I just hope we, you know what I mean, don't turn the ball over and give them some points, and then their defense can really come and cut loose if, you know, on us in pressure. What do you feel about the game?
I think you're right. I think that the Giants are one of the top teams at giving the ball away this year. And it's not just Eli. It's a lot of guys. A lot of guys are, like, just giving it up for some reason or another. Hopefully they've been working on that, been talking about that. Hopefully they've done some self-evaluation. And they can see that, hey, look, if we just hold on to the ball, we can change the flow of the game. A lot of that will be that first couple plays of the game, if someone catches the ball out in the flat, is he going to just run with it, or is he going to, you know, wrap it up and go down? Little things build, you know, it's contagious. If you make a good play and you hold on to the ball, the next guy wants to hold on to the ball. It shouldn't be at the end of the game where it's like, hey, look, we got the lead. Don't let go of the ball. It's got to be every play of the game.
I would say this. You know, we were talking. We had David Deal on the show yesterday, Howard, and, okay. And I think that, you know, you would second his opinion on this, especially against the Philadelphia Eagles team. You need to control the tempo of the game. You need to dictate the game. As David said, it plays into their hands if you allow them to dictate what's going to happen, because that's the way especially their defense is designed, and with their ultra-conservative offense, if they're allowed to do what they want, you got yourself a problem. You need to take them out of it, and you need to do what you want.
Well, yes and no. Here's why. They are one of the league's leaders in time of possession.
And the Giants are in the bottom of that.
Okay, and they are also one of the league's worst scoring teams. So how can you be in both places? So you got the ball, but you don't ever do anything with it. I think that it has to be more of every time the Giants have the ball, they have to be, you know, not perfect, but they can't just – they got to be good at what they're doing. Sustained drives are great. Eagles keep having sustained drives. That's what everybody talks about. How can you sustain the drive? I don't really want to sustain drive until, like, I'm doing a four-minute offense and I'm trying to keep the ball out of your hands. I want to score.
Mm-hmm.
So the Giants need to score. They need to score a few times. The Eagles aren't a come-from-behind team.
No.
They're not. And if you get a lead on them, things start breaking down, because now you're forcing Wentz to do something that he doesn't have the manpower to do right now. Darren Sproles is one of his biggest, you know, his biggest weapons. Ertz is another big weapon. Then after that, they're trying. So you want to keep them in that trying mode. You don't want to give them any short fields to work on.
All right, Joe, does that answer your question?
Yeah, I said I hear a lot from their commentators and that they think we're like one-dimensional and just put the pressure on Eli and that's going to win the game for them. And I do hear that a lot. So
They're the same team.
Right. That's why I don't want to turn the ball over or goofy penalties. They make a lot of penalties. And I did hear he didn't play a lot last week there. Matthews, he's in their doghouse a little bit because he fumbled the ball a few times there, too.
That'll do it.
So that's good. And I think now all our rookies there, they got a chance to see what it's like now. If they know their assignments and stuff like that, I just hope we can play together and pull this one out.
So, all right, Joe. Thank you.
My call.
I think, you know, think about it. You know, the Giants and the Eagles right now are the same team. They can't run the ball very well, and, you know, they're trying to make sure that their passing game kind of carries them through. They're hoping to play behind strong defensive performances. And if something goes wrong anywhere, they have a hard time making it up. Now, the Giants do score even after they've made a mistake, but the Eagles are kind of in the same boat. The other thing is that you got to think about is that, like I said, I spoke with the Eagles guys yesterday. They understand that we're in the same position they're in. We got to keep pace with the Cowboys, and that's what this is all about.
Two losses in the loss column behind Dallas. That's pretty tough right now. But, hey, still much time to go. Ernest, you're next on the show. Hello.
Hello. How are you doing?
Very good.
Very good, sir.
Okay. I have some concerns. I'm going to ask a few questions. First of all, do you think that McAdoo was given the reins too early? Because some of his play calling on offense is really – I don't agree with his so predictable. He runs the ball not to gain yards. He just runs the ball to let the defense see that he's running the ball. But he's making the team one dimensional just depending on his
Ernest,
passing
game. I'm going to give you two answers to that before you get to your next question. The first answer is he is still a rookie head coach, and every head coach who takes over an NFL team is going to have to go through some growing pains. He's going to have to experience what it's like to be a head coach. And he's going to have to live through that process. So this is not a finished work of art here. This is a guy who is going to try to grow into the role as he goes along. So you have to understand that. No matter how many years he's been around, this is the first time he's had complete control. So it's not going to be perfect. So please understand that first. Number two, He and Eli Manning have now been together for 3 years. Eli just had two of the best years of his career with McAdoo calling the plays. So for anybody who wants to throw darts at Coach Ben McAdoo and his play calling, I'm sorry. You're not going to get me to jump on board there, because he and Eli Manning have been a very good combination, and they have proven it time and time again.
All right, Ernest. So I don't have to say anything because Paul's fired up.
So what's happening this year? Why is he? And I couldn't understand that myself, because you are correct. Those past 2 years, Eli Manning was at his best under McAdoo. So I have to agree with that. But I'm just wondering what's happening now that they're not. I just thought that maybe they could run a little bit more sweeps with Perkins. You know, try to not just focus on those in that just going up the middle. You know, try to loosen that up. You know, some I don't know, but like you said, he is a rookie coach, and he has to go through some, you know, changes. My next question is, do you think that JPP will be with the team next year?
I have no earthly idea.
That's impossible to gauge right now.
I think
impossible.
I think that JPP will get asked back. Yes, I think that he will have options. Yes, I think that JPP, like any player, like. Now, I'm from a different generation where they were just starting the free agency, and I didn't really understand it when I was coming out, because you were hearing your coaches were talking to you, the agents were talking to you. Someone in the front office may say hello to you. You didn't really know. But as for me, if I'm talking to JPP, someone comes up and makes some ridiculous offer, take that money, boy. That's, you only have so long to play. So you can't, like, hey, I'm a Giants fan. I love the Giants. I want the Giants to offer the most money every time. But if someone comes up and offers you a lot of money, hey, man, it's been great to see you. Have a good time. Hey, hug your baby on the way out. Bye-bye. You know, you got to do what you got to do to play. Like, think of – I'll give you a great example. William Joseph. I mean, not William Joseph.
Linval Joseph.
Linval
Terrific
Joseph.
Player.
I watch him play in the Vikings games. I listen to what they're talking about. I'm like, man, that guy's with the Giants. That guy was a Giant first, but somebody offered him so much money, you can't turn it down. You got to be able to do it. And every team invests in their players differently. Think about Seattle right now. They've invested in that Legion of Boom. They've invested in that defense. They've invested the least amount of money in their offensive line in the entire NFL. And you see what Russell Wilson looks like back there? He looks like a little guy who's getting hit a lot. That's what he looks like. He doesn't look like that, oh, man, he's got beast mode beside him, and all he's got to do is, no. People are running free. There's jailbreak back there. Now you can see where investments go and what happens with him.
Okay, and I do want to say this right here. I think that Denoris Jenkins is playing lights out, even though he was beat twice. And I think he's one of the best in the league right now, the way that he is playing. But the thing with JPP, do you think that his sacks, and you know, I have been watching and pressure and stuff like that. I mean, sometimes I will just focus on him just about the whole game. Do you think that his product, I mean, what he's doing, would warrant a big contract?
Let's put it like this. If JPP has a sack a game or a sack and a half a game for the rest of the year, how many games we got left? Eight? Nine?
Yeah. Well, they've played seven so far, so there's eight left.
Okay, so let's say
nine.
It's nine. You don't know what you're talking
about.
Nine. If he has nine sacks going to the end of the year.
Right.
And he's got one or two now?
One now, I think.
One now. So now he's double-digit sacks. Double-digit sacks gets you paid.
It does.
And I don't think people appreciate the whole sack thing. The sack thing, unfortunately, is almost a myth. You got to hit the quarterback. You got to have pressure. But you got to play all parts of the game. You got to play against the run. He does a great job playing against the run. That's stuff that people aren't talking about. You hear his name on tackles a lot. You see him blowing guys up, causing the ball not to go around the edge, but, you know, roll out the top and taking time to get there. All that stuff, all of that is the stuff that you need to be a player. The sacks are great. If you can get there, great. But if you don't get there, you got to do a lot of other things. If you make one again, back to my son, you make one sack a game, but you play 40 plays in the game, and you don't do anything else with the other 39 plays, mm-hmm. That's nothing. But we'll pay you for it because the sack is the stat you're looking at.
I would also just remind you of one thing, and thank you so much for the call. We can all laugh at the punt that was intercepted by DRC at the end of the game in London against the Rams. Yeah. But for those of you who watched the entire play, it was JPP who got pressure off the edge, who got his hand in Case Keenum's face, who forced Keenum to panic and then throw up that lollipop that got intercepted. There was an effect of JPP's play and pass rush on that play.
Well, beyond that play, JPP had hit Keenan a few times.
Yeah.
JPP was knocking the tackle back in the backfield to give Snacks a sack. He loved that from JPP.
Yes.
There are other things that are going on in the game that, like I said, that makes a guy a valuable player.
Great example of JPP had a good game against the Rams and did not get a sack.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just that simple.
That's just part.
That's what we're trying to tell you.
The one play where he slaps Keenan to the ground, but someone fell on him.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a sack, but they didn't give it to him.
Right. All right. Next up is Tony from Manhattan. You're on the show. Hello.
Hey, Paul Howard.
Hi.
I was thinking during a bye week, this would probably be the perfect time for the Giants to try to, you know, practice a jumbo package. But seeing how they had last week off and Monday was a light practice, that only leaves like 3 or 4 days of real practice left. Is that enough time for them to install such a package?
Well, let's do this first. Let's talk about the time off. You don't get to practice every day on your week off. That's not that's collectively bargained away. So that's part of the. You know, when you're thinking about what they can do while they're off, that time is usually meant to get guys healthy if you can, give a guys breaks if you can because you've had, in our case, a London trip or a Thursday night game. So you're trying to build as much time as you can. As far as installing plays, I don't think that – here's what I think about installing plays. It's there already. It's will you call it? Do you trust it enough to call? I will say this, and I'll continue to say this, and the guys on the team, hopefully they don't get mad at me for saying this. We have a really, really small offensive line. We do. You know, outside of Flowers, it's not like these big, massive 320, 330-pound guys out there. So when you're playing against a guy who weighs 315, 320, 330, you're a little light in the butt. The plays that you're wondering, can we get – we have to get it blocked up front to get to the edges, to get the guys talking about, we should run the sweep. I'm like, you can't run the sweep if you can't run up the middle. It's just part of it. If I disrupt the middle, I disrupt everything. That's why I said a D-tackle is probably the best and most important player that's out there from a defensive standpoint.
Okay, I got you. We just don't really have the people for it this year.
It's not,
okay.
I don't know if we don't. I'm just saying right now, you know, they got it. It takes a lot.
Gotcha. Okay, my second question, even though Ernest sort of asked it, the offensive struggles, do you think that's more to McAdoo growing as a coach, or do you think the league is sort of caught up to the McAdoo offense, or is possibly a third option? Because to me, the talent level is either the same like with the offensive line or better at wide receiver than last year, so you would think we'd be doing better,
okay.
Or at least the same.
So how many times when you've watched the game have you seen Odell Beckham throw a block? See, that's a weird question, right? Because
yeah.
See, the actual game that's happening isn't just the five guys that are trying to block in the tight end. It's everyone playing. And I'm not saying Odell because Odell didn't block someone. But when you're watching an offense, you have to say, okay, where does the problem lie? Why didn't a play work? And it's more than just it's more than Eli. When Eli's playing, Eli is in the pocket. He's moving around. I'm looking at this. Hey, Eli has got time. Someone else may be looking at it. You have stats to say, like, he's getting pressure off the right side. Like, but the guy didn't hit him. Like, yeah, but he's getting pressure off the right side. He needs to be able to step into it. So there are all sorts of stats and things we can pull down to point out where we want to put the problem. It's not necessarily McAdoo. It's not necessarily the league's catching up with it. It's okay. Everybody has to be on the entire time. Success breeds success. What I think the problem is that when you turn the ball over, when you tip the ball, when you fumble the ball, when you have all those little issues, it doesn't really matter how well you're playing. If you keep giving it to the other team on a short field, they're going to beat you eventually.
Okay, but don't you kind of have to attribute that to McAdoo too? Because I never saw anything turnover-wise like this in the Coughlin, at least not, you know, the last – three or four years.
I don't think I've ever seen in the last 15, 20, 30 years of football, I've never seen a coach carry a ball. I think that the ball carrying and the ball handling is the player himself.
Now, I got you, but the players are the same, but we're getting more turnovers.
Yeah, but the first turnover of the year I think was Odell Beckham or something. Someone hit him from behind, he drops the ball. Or was it Victor Cruz?
Yeah, Cruz.
Okay,
it's Cruz.
Whoever it is, is the coach able to correct that? You see what I mean? Like,
no, but you know how Coughlin corrected Tiki.
That's a great conversation, you know, that I like to believe that happened the way that the fans wanted to believe. Tiki changed the way he's holding the ball. Coach Coughlin was a running back. He goes, put the ball high and tight, hold it like this. Once he did that, that changed everything. Now, every player on the field, how are you going to stop Larry Donnell from fumbling at 6'7" if he jumps in the air?
That's a hard one.
That's a hard thing. Like, you can tell him a million different things. The only way to stop Larry Donnell from fumbling, no offense to Larry, is to put another player in there and throw the ball to that player. Like, when Will Tye catches a pass, Larry didn't fumble.
That's true.
When Adams catches
I can't
pass,
dispute that.
Larry didn't fumble. So Larry is watching his reps go to other guys. That's how you stop that. But how many times? You only have 53 men on your team. Half of them play defense. Some of them are two kickers, a kicker and a punter. And then you have the other quarterbacks. So you start taking those people out. Then you put the offensive line in there and the D-line. Take those people out. Okay? Now you got like a little small group of guys. You can only rotate them so many times. If they make a mistake, you fumbled, you're out. Like, look at Matthews down in Philadelphia. That's their that's their horse. He fumbles a couple of times, okay, you're out. Okay, now you can't run the ball. Why can't you run the ball? Well, the horse keeps fumbling it. That's – you got to want it. You, as a coach, you preach it. You talk about it. But the players themselves, they got to find a way to make it happen.
I would like
– And things are contagious.
Yeah, oh,
if
sure.
If one person does it, you may believe that it's not contagious. That momentum thing, that mythical word Mo really affects you in good ways and in negative ways.
I want to second what Howard said, especially about Tiki. There's no question that Gerald Ingram, the running backs coach, and Tom Coughlin did show him a different technique in terms of holding the football.
Yeah.
But, I'm also going to tell you, Coach Coughlin told Tiki Barber, you fumble the ball too much. I don't like that. You're going to lose playing time. So he absolutely threatened him with playing time. And that is as much as changing his technique that got Tiki to hold on to the ball because he didn't want to come off the field.
Yeah, but you see how Paul's like blaming that on the moment? Think of this. If there's someone back there who can actually play in your spot, then you will change your technique.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of motivation to stay on the field.
If there's no one behind you that can change your outcome, then you're like, you're going to try to do it different. But, like, if the rookie receivers look better, then the starters start to hold the ball better.
No impetus like competition behind you. Trust me.
And believe me, I love Eli. I love Odell. I love JPP. But if there's a kid out there next year that we could just happen to get our hands on that can do the same thing as them for less money, that kid becomes very valuable really quick. So that's what the whole lure of the game is. You're only as good as your last performance.
All right. Thank you so much for the phone call. Please call again. 201-939-4513. We've got 20 minutes left on the program. I didn't get to any tweets, Howard, so I'm going to quickly call that up and see if we have a couple up here that we would want to get to. Again, some people are a little shy and bashful about calling us, so that's all right. That's not a problem.
If it's like me, you don't like hearing your voice that much.
Yeah, A.J. Marshall wants to know any news on Nat Burhe, if he's still in concussion protocol. Yeah. As far as I know, he still is, and even though he's practicing, he's in non-contact drills. That he's allowed to do. And until they get word from the NFL, he cannot have any contact or be on the active roster for the game.
I think, like I said, that concussion thing, that's a real thing. How do they do it? What part of the test they're doing and all that stuff? That is extremely real. Once it starts to happen, you can't get around it.
And I want to make very clear, the league controls that. That is not a team-oriented rule.
I think there's a slight confusion because you saw when Cam Newton – played against the Broncos that time. He got hit, and everybody's like, maybe he's concussed, but they let him get back in the game. That after that happened, have you noticed that quarterbacks, hey, sorry, winning drive, you're off, and they're not letting anybody do it again?
All right, we have here Weehigh Cleek says, Howard, Gronk is a heck of a blocker.
Okay, I will put this on Gronk. You watch Gronk; he does decent. Gronk's one of the better blockers in the league. Gronk's not blocking JPP. Gronk's not blocking defensive ends. He's blocking maybe a linebacker that he outweighs. He's bigger. He's wiping out safeties when they come around. But you know, short yards and goal line, they're not running out behind Gronk 90% of the time. Like it's just. That's just part of the game, guys. I mean, Gronk will get in there and mix it up, but he's not blowing guys off.
We have at BleedBlue180 says, has Beattie taken any snaps with the first team? Well, he did in practice some a few weeks ago, but at the moment, the Giants, as far as the game is concerned, they believe they've got their best five on the field, and they haven't decided to make any changes.
Well, I will say this. I know that every week that the guys play, they're constantly, especially the two guys playing tackle, they have to be constantly working on their game and their technique, working even harder now. They're sitting, seeing Beattie stand on the sideline, waiting for his opportunity to get in. That's why you work hard and you try to change your technique and get better at things. We were making jokes, me and a couple players, former players, about, you know, we should start a offensive line camp, a camp with offensive linemen and tight end, and call it reps and teach guys how to block. All over.
You
again.
Told me that a couple weeks ago on the air. You said you wanted to make some money.
Yeah, I mean, it would be a moneymaker.
I know it would
be a lot of fun.
Well, that's what was it? Charles Bentley from the Browns?
Yeah.
He runs an offensive line camp out in Arizona. Yep. Weston Richburg and John Jerry went out there.
Yeah. You need someone to help you get those reps because now the league doesn't afford you reps because we bargained it away.
All right. George from Pennsylvania is next on the show. Hello.
Hi, Paul. It's Stuart, not George.
Okay, apologize. It says George on my screen.
Yeah, well, it figures. First time, very, very long time, and I'm a Giants fan. Well, it goes back to 1950.
Nice.
So I have a little – I love the fact that you're old school, but I have to tell you that I'm an antiquarian.
Okay.
And for me, your golden age is not my golden age. My golden age is
Sam Huff.
Savage and Rosie Greer.
I got you. I got you.
Wrote and Frank
Dick Moduleski.
Sully Connolly.
I know all about those guys. Trust me.
Yeah, so, you know, those were the good old days for me. That's
Dick Lynch and all of those good guys. I'm with you. Emlyn Tunnell.
Here's the problem that we've got. We've had 4 years to rebuild our offensive line, and the GM has made a hash of it. He just has failed to connect. He's made the efforts, but it's not there, and it's killing us. And I've got to tell you, for Sunday's game, you know, I go into it thinking that the defense has to win this game for us, and the game is still won and lost in the trenches. So what do you guys think?
I think you and I, because we're old school, still believe that the game is won and lost in the trenches. A lot of people don't. But it's no coincidence that the three games the Giants lost this year, they lost the line of scrimmage on both sides, each and every one of those three games, Howard. There's no coincidence there.
Yeah, but like I say, I'll keep saying it over and over, and it's very hard for people to understand. It takes a lot of guys to block.
It does.
It takes a lot of guys to block. And if you could just line up and go mano a mano and try to figure it out without pulling someone, because if you pull someone, you create a whole new group of problems without sliding protection. Just go mano a mano and block like we did in peewee football. You would be able to tell a lot more. I think that, you know, as far as the GM goes, we drafted two first-round linemen in the last few years. They're coming along. I think Pugh's been doing good. I think that
Richburg was a two.
Richburg was a two.
Yeah. You know,
he's playing well. I think Flowers, as much as everybody beats on him, he's holding his own on the edge. He's playing the toughest position in football. He's doing okay. I think that every year they're out there looking, trying to bring other guys in. They spend a lot of time and a lot of, you know, interest trying to get guys to come here who use the Giants as stalking horses to get more money out of their own teams. I don't think the fans can appreciate everything. You're looking at the end result, and you're going like, well, he's not doing a good job. There's just no way to get better.
Howard, there has to be a bottom line. The bottom line is they either produce or they don't produce. And in this
case, we should have drafted Zach Martin.
They don't produce in the running game, and they don't give Eli more than a second and a half to get rid of the ball, which shortens the field for him, and it makes it very difficult for him to make plays to Beckham.
By the way, doesn't he sound a little bit like Howard Cosell?
He does. I like that. So if they had drafted Zach Martin and not drafted Odell Beckham, they'd have a better line. Would you give up Odell for Zach?
For a better line, yes.
Well, then that's you. Most of America would say no.
And
to point out and to make this point, and then I'll let you go, but to make this point, the Minnesota Vikings are supposed to be the front runners in the NFC. They're supposed to be the team that we're looking at. They're supposed to be ready to go to the Super Bowl. This is supposed to be their year. Their offensive line's bad.
It collapsed. It got hurt and collapsed.
The Green Bay Packers.
Yes, it did.
The Green Bay Packers are supposed to be the team of the year. Aaron Rodgers is running all over the field. He's athletic. What's the kid's name? Andrew Luck is supposed to be the second coming of quarterback.
Well, look at Carolina. Newton's running for his life.
Andrew Luck's supposed to be the second coming of quarterbacks. They have a bad offensive line. It's not the Giants' problem. It's the league's problem. The league's problem because it's harder and harder to get guys to be very, very super skilled. If they're not super skilled, it's hard to train them without the reps. Jerry Reese is just another GM that's in a long line of GMs that this is going on. Only teams like Dallas have a decent offensive line.
It's hard to come by.
Yeah. The team that the NFC feared for 2 years, the famous Seattle Seahawks, they don't have an offensive line. Their offensive line may be the worst out of all the offensive lines because they're invested – the least amount of money. So it's not our team. It's all teams. Maybe one team has a good offensive line, and that team we always look at. Everybody should do that. Like, think about this. The San Francisco 49ers had a great line for about 5 years.
Yeah.
Now it's a mess. All first-round draft picks. It lasted 5 years. We used to say, you draft a good offensive lineman, you'll have him for 15 years.
Not now. No. Free agency took care of that.
It's all over with. So that's what I'm saying. Not that there isn't cause for, man, I wish they could do better. Yes, there's always a call for, I wish they could do better. But don't look at our situation and think we're the only team in the situation.
It's really an epidemic in the league.
Oh, yeah.
It really is.
It's hard to point to good. I'm only interested in the Giants.
I totally get you. But if you don't acknowledge that it's an epidemic, then you're lying to yourself. It's horrible. I can sit here and go through team by team by team how many bad offensive lines there are. Like, literally, these guys are – I mean, they're all professionals, but these guys are bad. I mean, they're bad. Like, quarterbacks are getting crushed all over the league. You think the Miami Dolphins have a great offensive line? No. I mean,
honestly, and I appreciate your perspective and your frustration. Believe me, you know me. If you've listened to the show long enough, you know I love the trenches and I love offensive lines. But I have to admit, there's a drought going on amongst offensive lines in the NFL. Howard's absolutely right. You can't name on one hand the number of really good offensive lines in the National Football League. It's hard to build them. It's very hard to build.
That's true.
And think about this also. Tom Brady is the most phenomenal quarterback, supposed to be in the entire NFL. His offensive line is – he almost died last year playing football. That's what we're looking at.
Now, that doesn't mean you can't try harder to improve it, but just know that it's an uphill battle.
Yeah.
That's it.
Find a way and get an alternative run game going by scheming it differently or doing something. I hope they've taken some time in the break to think about what they can do with what they have. And I hope to see Paul Perkins on the field a bit more, too.
That could happen.
That's a possibility.
Thank you for the call. Appreciate it. Please do call again.
And isn't it funny, Paul, the last six or eight games of last year, Jennings was the leading rusher in the league.
The last month of the season, I think it was.
So everybody's so fired up what we were going to do the following year. And this year he comes out, gets a little banged up, doesn't quite get it done. And all of a sudden, it's like, what have you done for me lately? That is exactly how this good thing goes.
Somebody reminded him at his locker yesterday how he ran for like $1.60 against Philly in the last game of the season last year. He looked up at him and said, "Yeah, I remember that game. We lost."
Ouch. That's not good.
So, Chris, you're next on the show. Hello. Hi, Chris.
Oh, you're still there?
Okay, hey, go ahead.
I'm here. Pete Dye, good to talk to you,
you
man.
You too, sir.
Howard Cross, it's a pleasure to speak to a giant legend.
Thank you.
You ever think about maybe getting out there and coaching these guys up a little bit? I don't know. I'm just kind of throwing it out there. What do you think?
I've really considered coaching a lot of times. The main reason for me not coaching is Dick Raybon and Mike Pope. They were both great coaches of mine and great friends of mine, and they spent their entire lives with other guys as their kids. And I kept watching that, and I kept thinking to myself, man, I don't know if this is what I want to do with my life. I want to be around my kids. I want to spend time.
Yeah, I hear you.
I want to grow up with my kids, and they're great dads too. I don't want that to be the thing, but that time, like I was telling someone the other day, they were like, "Oh, I got a baby. The baby's like, he's tiny. He doesn't do much." I'm like, "Dude, revel in that."
Right. Yeah, I got you.
Every step, like you take a breath. That thing went from being mush to crawling. You take another breath from crawling to talking, from talking to running, from running to they're in school.
Driving.
All day. Then all of a sudden, I ain't got that far yet. I have got far enough where a little boy has been brave enough to start texting my daughter. I'm saying that on the air. So if y'all don't see me in a few weeks, had to take care.
I know that's right.
Go ahead.
Well, look, man. Listen. I'm not going to do the offensive line thing. That's easy at this point. I think they'll get better. I think a lot of offensive lines will start to pick it up here in the second half. I really trust McAdoo. I do.
Okay.
Easy to get on him too, but I'm not going to do that. But we got to figure out something with this running game. I don't care if it's smoke and mirrors. You know, let Perkins run with the starters permanently and just, you know, take the training wheels off him. Let him go. Let's see what he can do. I mean, we brought him here for a reason. And no disrespect to Jennings or what's the other little guy we got back
there? Well, there's Darkwood, there's Rainey. Perkins has the most unique, most explosive skill set of the running backs in the room. Now, again, is he prepared to become more a part of this offense? We're going to find out. And good for him. If he gets the chance, I hope it works.
So,
I think, you know, looking at it, even when Jennings wasn't in, I thought Darkwood was running the ball well. Then
he did.
Oh, I love him.
Yeah,
I love him.
But again, I don't know the rhyme or reason why they have the guys in and what's the rotation scheme. I'm from an era of one guy is your guy, and the other guy gets in the game is because, hey, look, you just carried the ball 7 times in a row. Come over here and sit down so you can catch your breath. And then we're going to bring somebody else in for 2 plays. You ready to go back in? I'm ready to go back in, coach. And that's kind of the 3 yards in a cloud of dust. That's not the same case anymore.
Yeah.
Give me another Howard Cross. Give me another Joe Morris or Dave Meggett, Rodney Hampton. Give me one of those guys. But real quick, I'll take this. I know you guys got to go. Howard, real quick, man, what is your opinion on Adams, the rookie tight end? And I'll take that off there.
Thank you for your call.
I think as every game that I see him, he gets stronger, more aggressive in the blocking. I think he gets more aggressive in the passing. He seems to have really good hands. He's very explosive running the ball. But the explosion that I'm watching is that when he's asked to block, he does a good job. Now, like anything else, I don't know. And again, I can't tell you if he does, if he doesn't, how well he knows each scheme and how to you know, take advantage of the moment. Because if he knows it, he's going to get more reps. Mm-hmm. Remember that, and I don't know if fans, you know, can appreciate this because we talk about it almost every week. Remember, the coaching staff wants to stay the coaching staff. they will put anybody in the game that gives them a chance to win.
Yes.
They may not like that dude. They might think that dude got funny hair, dude. They don't care. It's the I'm telling you, it's the Larry and Joes that are going to make the plays, and they're going to put them in the game. I don't think that – I think sometimes we think that you harbor bad feelings for a player and you don't get him in the game because he's not doing what you want. I don't like the way he acted or whatever. Coaches, they swallow a whole lot of stuff to get a guy in a game that they want to play because that player can help them win. They have some favorites, and they love those favorites. But when that favorite starts to limp, they're like, hey, man, really appreciate all you've done for me.
You know what? The bottom line is, and Pre-Dell, we're going to get to your call in just a second, it's about survival. And there's not a coach in this league, okay, or in any league, that is going to let a subpar player stay on the field if he thinks he's got a better guy on the bench that's going to help him win. It's just not going to be.
It's just not, because they change coaches so quickly.
Coaches change quicker than players, Howard.
Coaches are in and out. You draft a player, you got him for 4 years. If you're a coach and you do bad 2 years in a row, that third year, you're not on the hot seat. You're like putting out you're getting your resume together. I coached at the NFL.
Yeah.
And like, that's just the way that's the way the league works. And like, it's the changeover. Like, the Giants have been pretty good with keeping their coach, but that's only because of Coach Coughlin. The coaches after Parcells had a 2 year stint, a four year stint. Fassel had a little bit of a longer stint.
Yeah.
And then you had Coach Coughlin. Only Pittsburgh and the Patriots have coaches that have been there.
Well, the only reason Fassel was here as long as he was is because they did go to that one Super Bowl. That bought him extra time.
He was out. He was like, they had already stamped his ticket too. So what I'm saying is, you look around the league, you might see some recycled guys with different faces and different – oh, at Cincinnati.
Marvin Lewis.
He's been around for a while. But outside of those three guys –
Pittsburgh seems to keep their guys too.
Yeah, those three guys. Pittsburgh, yeah. New England, Cincinnati.
Yeah.
Then the next tenured coach.
I don't even know who it is.
Maybe in Green Bay.
Offhand. Yeah, that could be. That could be.
But that, I'm telling you, they just don't do it.
All right. Final call. I think this is Pradell on line two. Hello.
Yes. How you doing?
Yes, sir. Good. How you doing?
All right. I got something to say. I think the state of the Giants, I put the blame on two people. That's the GM and Eli. And my question, why did they get rid of Hanowski? What was the reason for that? When he was a sure enough blocker coming out of the backfield, that's when we were strong. Why would they get rid of him?
Well, here's two things that I've been saying a lot, is that if you make plays in the backfield, the fullback is not able to stop that guy in the backfield. If you're making plays at the line of scrimmage, then maybe the fullback's kind of in there or something. But if the play is happening when the Giants have tackles for loss, that nobody is helping them. The guys up front have got to figure that out and get, you know, be able to block a little bit better. If Giants have tackles for 1 or 2 yards, then maybe the fullback could have helped a little bit. But the other thing you got to realize is that if you're in 11 personnel, and I don't know if I'll challenge fans for this. If you're in 11 personnel, that slot guy is a is a blocker. And if that guy is running and he doesn't have his hands on somebody in the play, the guy that he was supposed to block made the tackle.
Mm-hmm.
Or he's in on the tackle. And I don't think that when you're watching a game, we're calling for the fullback or the tight end. And we don't realize the people that are in the game, they have assignments. Now, back at Alabama in the good old days, we used to say, the guy we want to find is the unblocked man. And we want to put that man as far away from the ball as possible on every play. Because we know the quarterback ain't blocking anybody, and we know the running back's not blocking anybody. So we need to put two guys somewhere so far away from the play, and we would try to block all the plays up and scheme plays to leave the furthest guy away out of the play. And that's hard to do.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I said that's hard to do.
Yeah, but now with Eli, we got three, I think, of the top receivers, the three of the best combination receivers in the NFL. That's what I think. If Eli could throw the ball while them guys are in stride, stop Will Bell, Odell Beckham always got to, you know, turn around, make that, you know, that spectacular catch. If Eli could throw that ball where they could catch and run, oh, bro.
Yep.
They would have 1,200 yards
this year. That's true. But that goes back
Eli's always throwing that ball where they got to, you know, turn around, turn the opposite way, or jump in the air.
Yep. But
he could get that ball to them guys in stride. I'm telling you.
I know what Howard's going to say. Go ahead, Howard. Tell him.
Here's why that some of that
Tell him, Howard.
You can only get hit so many times. There's so many people can step on your toe when you're trying to step up and throw the ball. You can only, if you bang your thumb one time, then you're out for the rest of the season. So Eli's suffering from finding enough space in the pocket to get his arm over to throw the ball. It, like, if Eli could run, believe me, Eli would run. He would run and get himself open and do that. That's not what you didn't draft a fast dude. You drafted a guy he's methodical. He's played in systems where he had to figure out a way to get it done, and he figures it out. I think in this half of the season, and I don't want to predict this, but I think in this half of the season, because there's more on the line, I think you're going to see Eli take hits more. And it's not because the line's playing worse, but I think he's going to take a few more hits because he knows he has to keep pace.
He got to take a couple more hits.
Yeah, but
he got to hang in that pocket. He got to deliver that ball.
Hold on. Right? The more hits he takes, the more chances he gets knocked out
of
the lineup.
If he's not in the game, what are our chances? Uh-huh.
Well, you know what? That goes to what you were saying earlier. That's why the Giants GM messed up. By not putting somebody behind him that's going to threaten him for his job.
No, you don't need to threaten Eli Manning for his job. That's not a good idea. I appreciate the phone call. Get back to us on another program. Big Blue Kickoff Live is here every Monday to Friday from 12 noon till 1 p.m., 1 hour, to talk Giants football, 201-939-4513. Jot down the number and give us a shout the next time. For Howard Cross, I'm Paul Dottino. We'll see you.
All righty.